Go to thecognitiverampage.com. Keep fueling the change. Help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects. Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. I've certainly been talking my Cognitive Rampage today, my friend. It has been a drawn out day, but I fucking love this. This is what I do.
Awesome, man. Yeah.
Welcome to the show, by the way, Kyle Kepin.
Yeah. You said it right this time. Perfect.
No Kepin. L. I'm such a douche.
No, everybody gets it wrong, man. My entire life, you should have heard the announcing the mics over the in the gym. You know, when you're wrestling, they announce your name.
Yeah.
Every time, everybody would make fun of me.
So, team. For me, it was chess tournaments.
But
and it would be Lowry, Adam Lowry.
Oh, yeah.
Lowry? Really,
that
motherfucker?
Doesn't even look like Lowry.
No, right, Lowry. I'm like, Jesus, man. Bad Boys helped, though. When the movie Bad Boys came out, people understood. They would be like, Lowry. Oh, Lowry. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Will Smith.
Did you get that a lot? Mike Lowry.
That was sort of the street name. That was kind of if we were hanging out and I was a little wild, it'd be like, ah, what's up, Mike? What's up, Mike Lowry? What's up? It was, man. It helped the last name a little. Well, at least though your announcers didn't do the dumb shit I did and add an L. I added a fucking L in the video, on the Facebook video. I'm like, there's no fucking L.
Yeah. I don't know. You probably weren't looking at it. No big deal. That O messes everyone up, man. I don't know what it is. Like I was saying earlier, I don't know if it's German or I think it's German. I've heard that a few German people have been like, oh, are you German? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know where I'm from. I got to do one of those genetic tests because
you'll just figure out you're part of everything.
Yeah.
That's all that
most
happens.
Most likely. Yeah.
You seen that one video on at social media, somewhere on Facebook where they get all their tests done and these people actually hated either this culture or this people.
That's amazing.
And then they tested them all and they're like, I'm 5% that. They're like, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, it totally was throwing business off because they're like, no, we're not those people at all.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, you're even some of that.
Yeah. That's amazing. Actually, my girlfriend Erin just did that, one of those tests where you mail it off, you give them a sample and you mail it off and they send you back like all the details, where you're from, where you originate from, you know, basically I think it's like a breakdown of your,
it's a genealogy or some shit.
Genealogy like study, you know.
I don't want to do it. I don't want them cataloging me.
Yeah, that's the thing. They keep track of it and they're allowed to sell that information to corporations, man.
I'm out.
Messed up. Yeah, as soon as she said that, I was like, I don't know.
You've been cataloged.
Sure? Yeah, exactly.
In 50 years, there's going to be like little robots of you walking around or clones of you doing some sort of work you never wanted to do.
Yeah, I don't even let my iPhone have my like audio, like voice of text, because they say that they'll keep track of your conversation so they can like, they say it so that they can improve how well they can structure your sentences, but
we happen to be capturing your voice at the same time.
Exactly.
Son of a fucking Siri.
Yeah.
Son of, oh God. So it's amazing where we're rolling to and where we head to, man. Just technology wise, you want to be excited, right? And then sometimes I want to make sure I don't wind up being the old dude that's going like, oh, life's changing. This ain't the same as it used to be. You know, I heard that shit and we hear that shit. And so, but it's hard to deny the impact of technology, really, though.
It's super contradictory. You know what I mean? I'm constantly thinking about it and I want to put my phone down, but at the same time, it's unlimited information. You know what I mean? It's like if you're, I don't know, it's very few amount of people that
It's a drug.
Yeah.
Knowledge is a drug.
Yeah,
and
it, for sure.
We intravenously, or at least through the eye, right? We're just absorbing. Well, for some of us, we look up competence. And
right.
Some of us are sharing other shit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It gives a lot of people a voice. Everyone's got a platform now. So even the agendas that we may not be needing to have a platform, It's just, it's good and it's bad. You know what I mean?
Speaking of a platform, my bad. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, it's just...
Speaking of a platform, man, we walked in and we're chatting and we talked about Christina Cusack, et cetera, and it led to the idea, or it led to the conversation that you'd mentioned something that you deal with Addison's.
Yeah, definitely. It's a genetic disease. My mother has it as well. She's actually been diagnosed. I haven't officially been diagnosed with Addison's, but the doctor tells us that our blood work looks exactly the same. I'm on the exact same treatment plans as her. I'm on like all these steroids and plethora of supplements that I got to take like 3 times a day.
Walk me through it. I'm
brought
a
couple
novice.
Just to show you, like, this is just, you know, I try to stick with Western medicine as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's basically my adrenals are not producing cortisol properly. You know what I mean? So
no shit.
This one's just for like stress and anxiety. That one's really the adrenal support one, but yeah, there's all kinds of stuff you can do to a certain extent, but once it gets to a certain point, you've got to supplement it with like actual pharmaceutical, which is, you know, kind of a thing that I'm trying to an advocate transitioning off of. But in some cases, like you were like with Christina, you're talking about, some cases it does actually, they do good things, you know what I mean? So it's just,
we shouldn't ignore the advancement of science just because of some sort of hard-minded philosophy.
Right.
You know, I shout out the whole thing as a whole to get to say, hey, pay attention, because it's not just those that need it. A lot of people are falling into it. And the shitty part is, unfortunately, when you are an activist against that, you're also sort of in a way making those drugs harder to, less accessible to those that actually need it. And that's a line I was kind of like, fuck, where's that crossing over from pointing out the whole system issue versus keeping away from, you know, like Christina Cusack, some of those other things other than the cannabis is, it is prescription, those pills. It stunts it from growing and continuing. Right. And I mean, so you cannot, you know, too much about the science.
Yeah. That's one of the things about Addison's and the genetic, it's a genetic disease. So it affects my adrenals. I don't produce enough. It's a stress hormone. I don't know if you know anything about cortisol. So I have to take hydrocortisone, which supplements the cortisol. And doesn't allow my adrenals to get overworked. And, you know, I take these other supplements just to try to, like, make sure I don't get to where my mom is, where her adrenals shut down. You know what I mean? After a certain point, if you don't take care of your body, it shuts down. And one thing I learned is diet, man. I could have completely avoided this. Even though it's a genetic disease, I could have completely avoided this with proper diet.
Oh man, because that's what I talk a lot about, the predisposition, the genetic predisposition that most people think is a given just because they even stretch into alcoholism. Well, my dad was, or my granddad, so I am. And that genetic implication does not guarantee shit. It's the environment that's brought upon it that a lot of times brings it out. Yeah,
definitely. I completely agree.
For you, I'm novice to the disorder myself, to the autoimmune. I don't know much. So for me, it's really learning it here. I'd much rather learn from somebody that experiences and knows the real deal than perhaps a professional even. So
yeah.
When the adrenal glands aren't producing, so side effects from that, what are the physiological symptoms?
All right. So the last time I fought was like a year ago. And after that fight, I went into the hospital. And that's when they found out that, like, you know, I need to start paying attention to this. So I've got blood work that's showing like I should have been dead after that fight with my blood work. I mean, like, they're exaggerating because they're trying to scare me and keep me in there, because I'm telling them, like, you can't keep me from fighting. You know what I mean? So I think they're trying to scare me a little bit.
Sure.
My mother knows the doctor, goes to the same doctor. So I'm sure she's like in her ear too. You know what I mean? She might be listening. I don't know. But yeah. So essentially it breaks down your, you know, anytime you stress, any pain, any like, my daily, you know, the simplest things sometimes can set you off, and just like my adrenals will go haywire. I'll have like adrenaline rush, or like, if I don't properly supplement, take my medicine, you know, I can't remember things. I'll get foggy, you know, weak, stuff like that. But basically, from the side effects of having it, when I went in and started getting tested after my fight, they had like 3 viruses, like 2 different things that I had caught because of the, my immune system was so jacked up and down. Yeah. So I was not just dealing with fatigue from the, from not having a stress hormone, but then these viruses were catching me. And like, you know, I've lost a ton of, I was cutting weight to get to 170. I'm at like 165 right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's definitely been a weird, transition of lifestyle and getting used to, you know, cutting red meat was really big problem apparently with my blood work.
And that's kidding.
Like, it was my favorite food, you know, who doesn't love steak, you know what I mean? So
yeah, a lot of people listen.
Yeah, exactly. I guess you're right. Yeah.
Well, I got a, I'm about to cook a wild boar that my girlfriend shot. So yeah, I mean, I'm on it, but you had to fuck. So it really did. So going vegetarian did have a strong effect on.
Yeah, it helps a lot. And when I break on my diet, you know, I can feel it immediately, you know, that especially the next day I wake up and I'm like, you know, I don't remember going to bed, you know, I'm like foggy. I got to take my medicine. My sodium levels all over the place. Just weird stuff happens. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things you were mentioning, like, you don't know much about it. It's so rare and there's not much science on it. So the doctors are learning as we're going. They're getting the blood work and they're like, all right, so here we're going to do this to treat symptoms and then we're going to try this and see how that works. If it doesn't work in 6 months, come back and then we'll try this. And so I've tried of different like effects or, you know, antidepressants. They didn't know what it was at first. So it's just, you know, weird trying to, it's like a disease that you got to react to. You can't, it's hard to be proactive with it. Mm-hmm. It just constantly we don't know enough and it's changing all the time. It affects everyone differently. So it's just,
well, hence I heard and no, but I couldn't make any correlation or I was racking my brain going, oh, nothing. There's nothing there. As I'm going, you know, my I probably don't want to put her name out, but a family member of mine has a very rare autoimmune, excuse me, disorder. And I can't even pronounce it. It's so long. Like I literally can't. And it didn't pop up till pregnancy, et cetera. And you see like almost more of these predispositions that pop out. You know, my father's affected by some that has light sensitivity, comes with headaches and things like that, but they can't quite put a guess an autoimmune to. You're seeing a lot of that,
right?
You know, and it's, I can't imagine, you know, having to live, to think about that, you
it's
know,
what we're eating, man. I'm telling you, it's GMOs. I'm telling you, I've been, you know, studying it, trying to figure out what is wrong with me. You know, I've dove into it.
That's okay.
You know what I'm saying? So from what I've figured out, it's your, obviously, like you said, your environment. So like a lot to do with your dietary choices. But yeah, it's I forgot where I was going with that, but yeah, it's just trying to keep up with it on a daily basis and know your body.
Yeah. You know? Well, you were saying it's trying to be proactive. It's difficult, but eat and the GMOs, the influence of GMOs are having an autoimmune rising possibly, or maybe they're just detecting more. I don't know, but that's what you were going with.
Yeah. I think it's the food. It's, like I was saying, that's right. I was reading about it and basically, you know, the foods, we're the first generation, like 90s babies, even 80s babies, really like the first generation to not have GMOs in our food. You know what I mean? Like our parents had home cooked meals every night. You know what I mean? Sure. They had like freshly grown stuff or somewhat. It wasn't like shipped in from China like it is now.
I was a box fed kid.
Right. Me too. I ate, you know, Hamburger Helper.
Sure.
And
mom make it on Wednesday night. Mom, I know, but look, she's working hard. Mom, I love you. She was at night school. She's working and shit. So I would come home from football practice, Chef Boyardee on the counter to heat up some beefaroni or something, or she'd make this cheeseburger casserole with the shells and some peas and shit.
Yep.
Everything out of a box, processed meat. I mean, the snacks were oatmeal cookies, you know. It, like the actual little Debbie things with the cream, you know? So
yeah, man, I just gave those up. It was so hard. I'm telling you, sugar has been the hardest thing. I'm still struggling with giving up sugar and caffeine. I got my tea right here just because if I don't get a little caffeine in me, I'm still like fiending. Yeah. It's the hardest drug, you know, that I feel like to get off of.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't done anything too crazy, but,
I've often,
you know what
said
I mean? It's pretty addictive and I feel, when I don't take it, you know, for or drink it for a day, I feel the effects. I feel like withdrawal.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you certainly do, man. I mean, not to mention we can mix in EMF, mix in any other kind of environmental issues that are taking place. I mean, back when we were kids, right, there wasn't so much, there was no 3G, right? We weren't surrounded by 5G, Bluetooths and wireless all over the place, right? And Dr. Jack Cruz walks people down that. We're still trying to find stuff there. They point stuff out. But even with all that there, to account for all that, man, I think the only way we can fight is the food or natural ways and knowing what you put pollution in yourself. Yeah.
Pollution is another one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you used to go outside to get fresh air, and now it's opposite. You go inside to get some
recycled shit.
Yeah, some filtered air.
Yeah.
So you're not breathing in fumes. It's just a weird place. It's a weird time to live. It's cool though. It's interesting. Like I feel like every generation thinks that they're living in this awesome time. You know what I mean? But we really are living in a pretty cool time. We're in I feel like a transition is really coming. You know what I mean?
It does. You
one
know,
one way or another,
whether it's technology, AI, mm-hmm. right? Whether we give that humanism up and transfer, there's certainly an odd time. I like to think that we're just, I don't know, maybe arrogant, egotistical chimps. Just, I think we may be the missing link. We're looking for it, but I think we may be it. And we are that link that's somewhere between the evolved apes and us, and then whatever we're going to become in 1,000 years, 10,000 years. Yeah, I mean, I do.
That's us in the future.
I do. I think we manifest it. We tend to do that, right? The guy who points out, are you lying to me, is generally the one doing the lying, right? So for manifesting the future us, non-gender specific, integrated with technology, a focus on the cerebral. We all wear the same clothes. We all look the same. No differences. And we fly around zapping things and collecting information and moving to other worlds. I'm like, that's kind of what we do. We just do a country to country right now.
Yep. Just for now. We're a bacteria, man. Joe Rogan said it best in one of the first Joe Rogan podcasts I ever heard. And no, he was in like a car. Did you ever hear his rant about us being like a bacteria or a cancer cell?
No.
It was incredible.
He has a couple of rants. He goes off.
He was talking about if you look at the Earth from like a satellite and you start zooming in, at first it looks beautiful, but you start seeing these patches of like dark, dirty, you know, and then you realize it's the cities, and it's like we're growing and we're growths on the planet, you know what I mean? Just destroying it. And ever since he said that, it's when I really started like changing my perspective on what we're doing to the planet, you know what I mean? That was back in college.
Yeah, when you look at, I shared an article too, when you're looking at outer space and then looking up close at a cell, everything looks a magnified version of itself. It's all the same. I think we're starting to walk into multiverses and perfect symmetry. I think we're walking down some physics, but I mean, whatever that means or is, it's, I don't know. It's almost like the gift, the curse, but here's knowledge to soak up. But know that the more you learn out here, the more you're going to know you don't know a fucking thing.
You just read my mind. I was literally, man, that's the best way to put it. Did somebody coin that quote?
Did
somebody come up with that?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, who was the first? I wish I knew who the first person to say that was.
I can hear Steve Stone now, who used to say this and be on the podcast with us. He would go, if we only had a device that could type in and look up any fucking thing we wanted to look up ever at all time, we could look up who said. See, it's difficult because I'm going live on this computer. We may screw it up.
You want me to look it up? I got my internet. Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, go for it. Look that shit up.
All right.
Yeah. See, Steve, we miss you, man. This is usually what you hear. You look some shit up, make us all feel sound smarter, and you just feed us information. But now we can look it up and see who coined that.
I don't have your Wi-Fi hooked up, actually.
No, we're all fucked.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Somebody out there make the comment, right? What was the fucking line we were saying? The more I learn.
Yeah, the less we know.
Yeah. The more we learn, the less we know.
It's really frustrating. It can that idea is really, I think, the basis of what
took me
into a really dark place in college. You know what I mean?
Walk me through it. Go on.
That, you know what I mean? You never think about that. Like when you hear that those kinds of phrases, you think about what the purpose of life is, and it's just like, man.
It's an unanswerable world. Question.
Yeah.
When you walk into the purpose or meaning for it, but you know what helps me if you start to walk in that is humility. If you walk into that and then you take out the idea that I have to be some of an important key or role into whatever this meaning is, I think when you can remove that, you can more or less go, I'm riding a wave too. You know what I mean? We're all just kind of developing here too. There's no, I have to have some purpose to belong here to make something happen. I think we assign that shit for some sort of created meaning.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely am battling with that myself, you know, that ego and feeling like trying to find my purpose. It creates depression, man.
What's it look like?
What?
Purpose.
My purpose?
Have you ever seen it?
No.
How tall is it?
I don't know, man.
Where we start looking?
Maybe like 6'2", 170.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the purpose. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
My point is you're looking for something that you can create at any time and uncreate at any time. So there's no magic thing that happens. You don't find your purpose, get a letter from the government like, congratulations, you found the shit that was hiding from you. You know, we create that shit. And that's how I added that last chapter and the second part of the book. I needed to rewrite that because I'm like, look, objectively apply that to anything. It doesn't mean anything, but it pissed me off because if people start looking for it, I was going, now you're telling people to go look for an irrational concept that they could create at any time and as multiple times as they want to. And then when they can't find this thing they're looking for, they're gonna get sad. You're gonna get depressed. And that's why I came out. And I was like, stop saying the purpose shit. It's a purpose myth. But what's cool is because of its strength, we can go, my purpose is to. Purpose and that belief can manifest into something or nothing. You know, I mean, that's why I asked people. I said, if you define it as your purpose, but you're bad at it or you don't achieve it or doesn't work, was it your purpose or were you just applying? Because if it's your purpose, it seemed like destiny would be involved.
Right.
Right. So if we have purpose and we have a predetermination of where we'd be, then if I do it and I don't predeterminately get there, then it really wasn't my purpose.
Right. Then you're questioning what's your reason on the earth and all that. Then you're in a dark hole. That's what I was saying. You know what I mean? It can cause depression, man. Especially when you first start looking into the globe and what's going on around the world, you know what I mean? It can be dark. That was, you know, college days. I'm sure you
went serious times, man. Yeah,
when you're like 18, just starting to really take stuff seriously.
Well, you kind of wake up and go,
yeah,
what the fuck? You know, you live in, I mean, hell, just talking about making cannabis illegal or not, but yet, you know, access to a drug that'll kill you, addict you for life is easy to get to. We were chatting about that today with Christina, and, it's sometimes all you can do is go, what the fuck, you know, and just look back. But, you know, the idea of purpose used to haunt me, man. It used to haunt because my purpose, sole purpose was to play in the NFL. I mean, period. Beyond that, life was not worth living. The existence of achieving honor through the field of gridiron. You hear how dumb that actually sounds? Yeah, you know what I mean? When you're literally saying it like that.
Yeah.
And so this was my purpose. And so when I saw it that way, when that lost or goes away, you start going, wait, well, then if that's not. And I also make the argument, man, we don't know what our purpose could be. It could be cool that you have to be here a little later because you stop someone from crossing an intersection that doesn't kill someone. You know what I mean? That saves some other life down the line. And maybe that was your only fucking purpose.
Right.
You know what I mean? Maybe, like, I love George Carlin. Maybe our only fucking purpose was make plastic for the earth so it could absorb it into its elements and then it's going to do away with us. You know?
That's a great idea. Dude, see, that's funny you mentioned him in plastic, but I just read an article where they actually have a bug now. Like, they just discovered a bug that can eat plastic.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So they're like, we got to figure out how to get these bugs more.
You know what they'll do? They'll just throw them in the ocean, the plastic. Go, there you go. And then they'll go, oh, fuck. They eat all of the salt water, too. Yeah. So they're eating all the soda. But then we'd have fresh water.
Right. Yeah.
God. Most of them do. They used to, being born and raised in Florida around here, man, they used to introduce a new species to try to get rid of another species and then they'd have a problem. I'd be like, what the fuck are we doing, man?
Yeah. You know, they just released like 500,000 mosquitoes that were genetically modified in Florida in the Everglades.
Quick, don't fuck with me.
They just did that last year or the year before because what they're saying is the science shows they will, once they mate, like they eliminated their sexual reproductive system, so when they mate it'll stop the bloodline from continuing, so they were going to wipe out like a large percentage of the mosquito population. We're going to
eradicate mosquitoes in Florida in the beginning in the Everglades.
That's what they said.
With genetic modified fucked up lab mosquitoes.
Yeah, it was scary to me also.
What the fuck?
Some Jurassic Park shit right there.
It is, man. Yeah. Holy shit.
God. I mean, that was the point of love bugs, too. They were, like, created at the University of Florida or something, right?
Yeah. I actually looked that shit up. Most people, they don't know that shit. They moved to Florida, and they're like, what's a fucking love bug? And I'm like, we didn't fucking know either until the Gators, let that shit go.
Gatorade and love bugs. Thank you, University of Florida. Seriously.
I appreciate it, right? High fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup on the football field and love bugs. Fucking my paint job up for like 10 years.
Drinking stuff that's supposed to make you better when you're sick, and then you find out when you're older, it actually makes you sicker.
Yeah, that does. I think about that, man. Because, dude, all I remember is coming home and my mom and I communicated through post-it notes. So she'd come home and leave a post-it note of shit to do, chores to be made, and usually the can of something was sitting next to it. Yep. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, that's all I fucking ate, man.
Yeah, he said raviolis earlier. And, I grew up on raviolis, Pringles, and Mountain Dew. You know, it's just like the worst diet possible. We didn't know any better. My parents didn't know any better. You know, we weren't educated.
Hell, they were still eating low fat.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Coke Zero and stuff. It's all going off the shelf constantly. I don't know if they don't, you know, they're ignorant to the information or they just don't care. You know, I don't know what it is.
The Publix, dude, like we go over there to Publix and buy a couple of things, you know?
Yeah.
And I cut through the aisle. I shit you not. Every time I walk down the soda aisle where all this fucking 2 liters of garbage is sitting.
Yeah.
And usually like some peanuts or something's on that aisle or whatever. So I'm cutting through, right? But this dude is on this aisle every fucking time I'm in Publix, right? So this time I had to say something. I go by and I'm like, and he always says, hey, or whatever, we chat. And I'm
he work there?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, no, he works there. I should say he's always in the aisle stocking the shelf.
Okay.
And I'm like, do you work in another fucking aisle? I'm like, you are forever stocking soda every fucking, I don't care if I shop at night, in the afternoon, he's fucking, and he goes, this is 40% of our revenue.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
And they put it right next to the bread that you have to go get every day or every week.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I went, 40% of your revenue is the fucking soda lane? I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's insane.
Now, whether that's true or not, or he's a stock guy and doesn't know, if it's 20, there's a fucking problem.
Seriously, I know. It's a half a lane, typically, that is taking up that much.
You're right. It's one fucking aisle. It's the left side or right side. Yeah. It never both. Damn, so one fucking aisle, essentially, on the left or right. Yeah. One side. One fucking part 40%. Of the lane.
Why would he lie about that? I mean, there's no reason. You know,
unless he's just pissed off from stocking it all fucking day. He's like, this has got to be 40% of our fucking revenue because I'm here every fucking day at my shift.
I got to get people to stop drinking this shit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Dude's in great shape. You can tell Buddy takes care of himself. Yeah. He's healthy. Teeth look good, right? He's a good dude. Nice, man. Mm-hmm. And I can see him, and it's almost like he's ashamed. Like he's putting it on the shelf like, I'm helping kill these motherfuckers.
Yep.
You know? And I swear he has that look like,
enjoy still, chemicals right there, man.
Perfect. Little shout out to you again, Terrence, man. Enjoy chemicals, man. Go to the terrycloth.com. Buy a shirt.
I got to write that down, actually. I was wanting to get one of those.
That shit. I saw the terry cloth. I'm like, I love that shit. My dad used to have terry cloths all over the motherfucking house. We were fishing all the time, so we just had that shit around the house. Yeah, bad memories with terry cloths, except this one. Now I have new memories with terry cloth.
There you go.
I like the material, too. That's cool. But it's wild, man. What's really out there. And you know, I used to be the guy when it first was popping, you know, the eat organic phase and all this shit was starting to pop off. I'm like, all right, what are you selling me now, motherfuckers?
I'm like, same.
You're jacking me. What are you selling me? And then all I did was just try it. I said, I'm talking shit. Might as well do the damn thing. Yeah. And I did it for a month and 40 fucking pounds.
In a month?
Almost month or two. It wasn't long. I've been lifting heavy. I've been lifting heavy. I was 248 pounds. I was maybe thinking about maybe trying to walk on again. How old was I? 34, maybe 33, old dude.
Yeah.
And maybe one more go around. I was coaching again at the time. I think I at least go to the combine, right? Get a walk through one more.
Yeah. Right.
And so I've been training at 230, 248, and I had to have this fucking cyst thing removed from my hip and kind of ruined it. But then I remember I was sitting around. One, I was in fucking pain. My back hurt. Everything fucking hurt.
Yeah.
And then I kind of stumbled upon this this guy named Naudi. He does functional patterns and fell on that. And I went, let me just stop doing the shit he's saying hurts you and try this eating thing at the same time. And when I did that, it was 2 months. It was gone, man. And I'm like, fuck, before I know it, gone. The lower back, you know, when you're an athlete, you just kind of go, I'm going to have to just live with that shit. You know, I'm just going to have to do that. And as soon as I stopped squatting, deadlifting, benching, when I quit all that stuff, and focused on posture mainly. I would just work on trying to do that. And that was just difficult shit to learn unless you get into it. And I have time to, right? But I just stopped the stuff I had been trained. What was hard is I'm a football guy. All I know is the bench, the squat, right?
Right.
Take that from me, and I'm not a – I can't help you get in shape. You know, I can mm-hmm. I know intervals and say whatever. Right. But I couldn't say shit. And so for me, it was going, all right, I'm going to listen to this little fucking arrogant motherfucker. And I'm going to go, all right, I'm going to just stop with the squats and the thing and just do posture. And at the time, I was swimming a lot. So I'd swim and hit the heavy bag. And that was pretty much it. And I stayed there. Fucking just fell off. And at this time, I didn't want to work out. So I said, I'll do posture, ice cold showers, myofascial release on the roller, pretty heavy. Which took me
What is that?
Myofascial release. I do it with the roller, foam roller outside. Yeah. And lacrosse balls and different things. So all I did was that, the cold showers, and I ate the organic as possible. And cut red meat like once a week, twice a week, you know. And when I did that, all of a sudden, man, shit fell off of me. I walk around at 175, 185. Really? Depends. That's where I'm at.
Wow.
Back pain, no more. I have no fucking back issue whatsoever fucking ever.
Man, I got two things to back up on. The red meat thing, you said you cut back to only eating once or twice, or you cut it back once or twice?
Eat it once or twice a week.
Okay.
A steak like once a week.
Okay, I got you. I thought you were saying you were like eating meat every single day, and you're like, I cut it back 2 days.
No, I balance the shit. I balance the shit, and I dump the carbs. I dump the breads and all that other shit.
Right.
And the sugars mainly. Sugars, carbs, but I still eat a sweet potato, you know. And, you know, I stopped what I found and works for me now. Like we were talking earlier, I've been fasting all fucking day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Yeah, just water with a little splash of OJ in there and barely a splash and mainly water.
Yeah, it looks like a little mixer drink over there.
The intermittent fasting, and I eat what the fuck I want, and I don't gain weight. I don't get fat, but I'll fast 2-3 times a week, sometimes 14 hours, sometimes 18, sometimes 4, you know, just short periods of that. And I stop worrying about what to eat or what I'm supposed to eat so much. That effect itself lowers cortisol levels, et cetera, which sometimes stresses people out just from worrying that much. But that was really all that happened. I kept doing the posture stuff, the myofascia, cold showers, and ate balanced and as clean as I could fucking find. I focused more on clean than anything.
Right.
And back. Done. It was month two. And I'm like, what the fuck? Holy my God. I thought that, you know, for life, you know, I'm like, oh, that'll be an issue when I'm 50. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's amazing that's shit. Insane.
What's the cold showers do? I mean, I've heard a multitude of things, you know, for right after your workout or whatnot, but just...
Yeah, I do it after the myofascia. I roll for a while, gets you a little sweaty doing it. You know, it hurts sometimes, man. Yeah. Getting some of that pain, it hurts. And so you go from there, and then just a light shower. I try to make it a minute when I first started, or 30 seconds, you know, and then change it. You go hard, really, really cold for a little while, and do different things that affect your body. I would journal. I also kept really tight journal at the time. I go, I felt this way when I did this. I felt that way when I did that. And I was going, so I just couldn't at the end go, well, I look better. I didn't want to say that. I wanted to be like, well, I literally fucking felt better.
Right.
Like this was changing on me. The back was less. This was, I thought maybe if I slept different, I tried it all. Sleep different. Don't fuck so hard. Right. I was trying fucking everything, man. I'm just like, nah, man. And it really did. It fucking changed that shit.
So, but, and then the fasting,
I wish I knew
what motivated you to get into that. Cause I've also seen a couple, you know, short videos, never really Dr. Rhonda looked into Patrick. The, really old, black dude that's
no
not him
it's a lady
oh okay
Dr. Rhonda Patrick and her research for the most part is what kind of got me into the fasting part and looking what happens, and it attacks diseases, it does certain things to you. They actually I can't remember they showed the fasting and switching over to run on an all-fat diet to where you're getting off of the glucose. Yeah. Trying to find out whether that's real or not. But they were showing how just switching to that and then working with intermittent fasting was having some serious results on certain diseases, autoimmune disorders, certain things like that. Wow. I want to even say autism. It's crazy shit.
What?
Yeah. And so, so I do that. And I skip it, you know, certain days, but every other day, maybe every 3 days. And I do it to where when you go to bed, I may eat a big ass fucking meal at 10:30 at night when they tell you not to, right? And I try to avoid, it'll be, you know, probably more meat or veggies or something, right? But then I'll just sleep on it. And then I'm going to sleep 6-8 hours. I try to get my 8 at minimum. Then I wake up. I've already done 8 hours fasting. I just do another 8 and I got 16. You get more effects when you're hitting the 18-20 mark as opposed to 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
But I'm knock on fucking wood if you believe any of that shit, but I ain't been sick. Like, I don't get sick. Yeah. My daughter, who's sick a lot, who lives over at my ex-wife's house, she's sick. She's over here. She's sick. She's I've been around her, kiss her, hug her. I don't get fucking sick.
Yeah. Man, wow.
I don't do supplements. I don't know that shit. I take garlic and ginger supplement in the morning with double dose of vitamin C as a pill, and I drink a massive green shake every day for the most part.
And that's a lot of good.
Vitamins. And intermittent fast. That's it. And I beat the heavy bag, bro. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I want to be in there with y'all at Fusion, man, doing that stuff. Julian almost gets me every time. I roll him a couple once, twice, just trying to get the fuck up. And Brett Solomon beat my ass once on the mat too. And for me, I was going like I love the competition that can be. I beat my ass up for a long time playing ball.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm just kind of going, I don't hurt anymore. I don't tear an ACL.
I don't miss it.
No.
You don't miss her.
I have nothing to prove. I don't need to. I fought enough motherfuckers. And I'm too old now. I shoot a bitch. Because some of them are trained killers like you. You know what I mean? Then you meet them and you're like, I can't trust. Because shit, some little kid at Fusion fucking whooped my ass too, Roland. What's his name, man? He was a just green or purple at the time. Young kid. He's like four. Nicest kid. Sage?
Who are you talking about?
Sage, I think, is his name.
Yeah, actually, I think that is his name. Skinnier, tall kid.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, he's gonna be a killer. He already is a killer. I think it was him or somebody else, but yeah, the dudes, JT's boxing kids, when they come in, even just flow with us a little bit, they crack me, man. My stand up's terrible, but yeah, I mean,
don't have a good time. I'll watch. I swear to God, I'll watch. Yeah. I'll come and I'll watch, and I'll be like, all right, but Julian, he's sneaky as shit too. Julian will get your ass. He'll be like, what's up, Adam? Yeah, you wanna roll, man? She's like, no, come on, man. And be
we'll
quiet as
easy.
Shit.
We'll take it easy.
Yeah, we'll take it easy, right? Next time. And I can't take it easy. And I felt bad too with Brett because I hadn't really rolled that much before. And I rolled with Brett in like a junior. What do? Right? I'm going full out like this. Why? Like, I'm going to get this shit. The next thing I know, I'm getting squeezed the life out of me between his legs. Dude ain't even breathing out of his mouth. I'm on top of him. Like, Brett's like, you good, man?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, not at all. I'm pretty much fucked right now.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I just don't want to fucking be injured, man. And I hurt too long from the squats and the fucking bench and the ball and I ain't immune. I'm not gonna walk in there and get my shit fucked up.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't want to recover from a fucking ACL tear right now. I just I'm fucking 36. I think maybe I'm 37. I don't fucking know. I really don't know. I really don't know. I try not to keep track. I forget. But no, man, my hat's off to y'all that do it, man. It saves lives. I think it's great for people. I think it fucking, it's amazing. I think it's a fucking treatment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, it's a fucking mental health treatment.
Yeah, it's super humbling. I mean, I can't believe the person I've become just from really, I mean, Julian has made me, there's moments where he's had me in a hold and I like question everything about my life for a second. You know what I mean? Like, you think you're going to die and you start questioning, you know what I mean? Like he'll get that feeling going and you, so I haven't been training in a long time because, you know, trying to recover. Sure. I've just started back actually, you know, once I was speaking to Mitchell from Shout Out Combat Night, you know, hopefully got that fight coming up in April. If Julian hears this, he's going to be mad at me because I haven't got to talk to him about it yet. But with his blessing, once I prove that I'm healthy enough, I'm going to be back in there in April. So
we'll cheer for you in April. Now I know Julian will have you right. He make the right choice too.
Yeah, he will make the right choice. That's where what I'm talking about earlier. You know, I'm still battling with my ego and stuff like that. I'm still like trying, you know, talking about purpose and all that. I'm still trying to fight that ego inside me. You know, half of me is telling me I need to be safe and take it slow and like find another path. But
I don't recommend fighting for anybody.
Just like I can't not do it, man. Cannot do it.
Yeah, I think I used to say, well, it's probably similar to a lot of football players I talked to. Once they heard, I started talking about athletes' depression as something that's real that athletes go through. You know, I talked to, it's a shitty ass example, but you got to mind you people, I'm talking to athletes and locker room dudes that get cursed at their whole lives for being slower. You know what I mean? Or fast or too slow, you know? So these are athletes. So I would say, look, a lot of times when you leave the game where it's football or fighting or whatever it is, we look to try to replace that. We look to find the exact same thing. You see a huge correlation of ballers that go into brawlers. I mean, literally, you start fighting, you know. Mm-hmm. And the issue becomes is, can we be okay with knowing that We never will have that again, that it was just something different. And the terrible, terrible example I use, but some guy will fucking relate, I know. And please, ladies, if you listen, don't judge me. Maybe you had a guy that had, okay. All right, I'll stop. I'll quit baby stepping. So we all, at one point, as you get older, have this one woman maybe you had some fun with one night, and it was like, what the fuck? That was awesome. Nothing will ever live up to that again. And it may have just been once. More than likely, it is just once.
Right.
And you never see him again. And then maybe the next or the other or something, or even a girlfriend maybe you had, and you keep comparing the next person to them, or that moment, or that one night stand, or even the long relationship. And then you keep going, ah, now that was better. Now this was better. It's not quite, but it's this. When you hold that there, you miss the other levels, the other platforms, the other places that are a different kind of love, different kind of experience. And I walked around. So for me, man, when balling was over, the only way I could get it was put a pistol in my hand. Let me rob somebody that thinks they're gangster. That's what I wanted to do. I robbed wannabe dope boys, no mask, kicking your door, say that I'm taking your shit. I mean, that for me was the only way I could find it, or until I was moving bricks from the keys up, you know, until that shit was happening. That's the only way I could find it again. Mm-hmm. Now, not to mention I was raised in an abused home, but there's a whole other story to that. But
yeah, I mean, I got a little bit of your background. I've heard it.
But it's similar. So fighters do that, you know, and I tell them, be okay with not being able to find that exact thing again and shelf that. Stop looking to replace that. When you're trying to replace that, you're not. That's why it's fighting. That's why it's football. That's why it's whoever she was.
Yeah, it's different. I got you. Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely all go through that. I just went through that with my current relationship, you know. Came out of a bad one.
Yeah.
You know, a year or a few years before that. So it was really hard going into another serious relationship, you know. So
yeah.
I can definitely relate to that.
Especially to you. Go ahead.
I was just wondering about athlete's depression. Did you start thinking about that when you were in school and you were like, you know, training and stuff like that? Is that when it really hit you?
Yep.
You started thinking about it.
Yeah, I had to look at my own self and how it kind of grew on me, than what I thought, than what certain diagnoses were at one point, then were different at another point. And I started going, man, this is different. There's something here. And then I meet another athlete or an ex-athlete or an injured athlete, you know, or an athlete that just lost, you know, or who just got cut, you know, and you talk and go, man, there's something here that starts to mimic what looks like ADHD in the beginning. And it is not. They're just high program fucking gladiators. You know, if you're 6 and 7 playing sports and you're raised that way, that's different than a kid that's not.
You think that's your purpose?
Well, yeah, but you're raised like, get the fuck up, got to train. Yeah. This is honor, right? We're fucking gladiators. So when you take a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, and you put them in that mentality and they live that mentality to pros, to college, to whatever, to a kid that just went to school and came home and went to the Y, you know, and came, that's a different environment.
Totally
so
different.
How can I say that the depression in this person, and it's the same depression or same mental health effects as somebody that was raised in a completely different environment over time?
Right.
It's not the same. And an athlete, they fight it. And an athlete's one of the last persons that are going to ask for fucking help.
Yeah, they'll be to themselves. Yeah, for sure. That's been my mindset until 2017. And thank you, my girlfriend and my mother, like, banging my head against the wall, convincing me, you know, that this isn't just something that you can overcome, you know, by yourself, or, you know, mentally overcome. You can't overcome everything single-handedly by yourself. There's some legitimate things that you've got to deal with, you need help with sometimes, you know.
Damn, so, I see that. So you taking on the fighter sport mentality of, I'll just find what it takes and I'll beat it.
Yeah, that's been my mentality since, you know, I was a kid. So and then that actually, with the autoimmune disease that I have, it's actually like counterproductive. It just caused it to hit me way quicker and faster because I put so much stress on myself.
Stress on yourself to find solutions.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Fuck.
That's why I asked you, was it college? Because it's college that I really... was the first time I didn't even believe in depression, man. When, you know, growing up, I was like, everybody's got ADD.
Yeah.
Everybody's got depression. Everybody's feeling anxious, you know, until you really are battling it on a daily basis. You don't know what, you know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So, you hear it. You certainly hear people that chalk it up. They go just like that. And I was kind of the similar way.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, it's what is the sadness? You do this, you do it. Most people don't even get bipolar. They think you're happy and sad one day.
Right.
And it's fucking not even remotely close to what bipolar is. So we don't, you know, most people don't fucking know, you know, what it really means. And for me, it's when I was actually first working in the clinic and then looking back, work as an intern in a clinic, and then eventually some private practice, but talking to athletes at the same. But then looking back at kind of my etiology, what I had denied help for a long time, denied anything, was experiencing, made money, became successful, but I was doing high risk situations. It was insane.
Yeah.
And you look high strung. So a lot of athletes look, that's why I was talking about the etiology of it, why it's different. Is it just doesn't come on like a normal depression. Like there's an activating event and then you kind of follow the basic steps, or a lack of serotonin or whatever. It begins to actually look like ADHD because the athlete knows how to push, how to push, how to push. So the only way I know how to beat this is to push right, head down, put, I'm going to study, I'm going to learn, I'm going to research, I'm going to work out, I'm going to get it done. So what we do is I'm going to fight to get through this. Well, it starts to look like ADHD. Mm-hmm. It starts to look from a doctor's perspective after talking to you for 5 seconds. It looks like ADHD.
Right.
So then they hit the athlete with ADHD. The athlete then believes they're ADHD, may start a pill regimen at the same time. Over a while, the athlete keeps pushing and pushing as they do, fails for various reasons I'll get into in the book. But with that failure then becomes the loss. My purpose has failed. It must not be my purpose. I thought it was. I must have been stupid, right? So then it starts to look and now we're depressed because we failed over and over and over. We've started 6 businesses. We went to school and failed out. We tried 6 relationships. We got divorced. So we failed over, but it's been a 10-year stretch of failing that looked like ADHD. Now all of a sudden we're depressed. Well, fuck yeah. And then use that depression many times as misdiagnosed after that as being bipolar. Because then you get the athlete that looks like they're on ADHD, that they're hyper all the time trying to push, but then all of a sudden they'll flip to some crazy risky situation. And that's usually earmarked by sexual risky situations, fighting, things, robbing motherfuckers, selling dope. Yeah. These are the things that you go to try to get that same switch. And then you get that misdiagnosis, that debilitating misdiagnosis of bipolar. You can get a disability check for that. The athlete now believes they're bipolar when the truth is it's been a form of athlete's depression from the very beginning, which has to be treated differently. It cannot be treated the same way as typical depression because of how we molded the individual to begin with.
So are you going to talk, obviously you're probably going to talk about that in the book and actually break that down and go into it.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, like the difference in how they would be treating it, right?
Oh yeah.
Do you mind?
Yeah, no, sure. Oh yeah, dude. Fuck yeah, man.
Like I relate to it a lot.
Well, yeah, you are that athlete. Yeah. You are there, man. And you know, the difference, the reason you can't, as mind you, is if I took, let's just say I take a dog, right? I take a pit bull puppy, 2 of them, right. And I put one in the environment of non-competitive, non-combative. I'm also, Nick and I, the co-author, are trying to also prove it's the same effect for non-violent sports is equal to. All right. So we made the hypothesis that if you played sports from a young age, no matter if you quit at high school or in the pros, my hypothesis was, is you have a 75% more likely chance to experience severe mental health disorder from playing those sports, those competitive sports. Mm-hmm. It's not anti-sports. It's just pointing out what I thought.
Right.
He did a brief survey and it found out it was about 85% had actually experienced something severe in their lives. Right. So if I just take those back to those 2 pit bull puppies and I put one pit bull puppy in the typical kid, because not every kid's the athlete. Everyone tries to be, right? The athlete, Pop Warner, right? But then it gets thin out. The herd starts to thin out, right?
Exactly.
The further you go. So if I take that puppy and I make them, well, they go to school, they play some t-ball, they play some, you know, little league, they do the thing. Maybe they tried out for high school, but didn't really. And they went down another avenue, maybe focused more on schooling or something. Who knows? Maybe ballet, I don't know. Right. And then the athlete who, if you came from my home in 6th grade, I had to take the deep walk and commit myself to the NFL. And I'm in 6th grade. I'm like, yeah, I just want to play football. Little did I know I was committing to 5 a.m. workouts for 5 days a week, beginning in the 6th grade every morning. Yeah, I didn't know that was coming, right? And so take that pit bull and run them through a workout like that. 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, up at 5 a.m. running, force down the calories, get big. You have to do the thing. So you're judged on this, your performance, your friends, your social. I am the linebacker. Without that, without my team, my brotherhood, without all of this social connection, all of it wraps around that thing, that who we are, that label of the athlete.
Right.
So take the pit bull that's been raised to be a gladiator, told everything hinges on your performance tonight, son. Whether the school likes you tomorrow, whether your dad's going to hug you at the end and say good job many times, right? So this could be so many things. And so if I run that pit bull through a gamut of training like that, is that the dog I want to buy for the cute little girl is trying to meet a nice guy and wants to settle down? What kind of pit bull did I just fucking get?
Yeah.
Or that other one. that went through a little bit of little league, got it, took different environments. So if I process a gladiator and look, we use words like glory and honor. Mm-hmm. These are deep words. So if we're raising our little selves or our kids to be these gladiators, and then I then swipe that. Now, this is the most developmental age, 7, 8, 9, who we are, what the world is, how I'm judged, how it works, right? So I am my performance more than most, and I perform in an intense situation. Hell, what's Joe call fighting, right? Dire consequences, a quick game. You know, you have terrible responses, right? In fighting or in football, these are dire consequences at high speed. It's a game.
Right.
But when that's hypervigilant, that's the same almost as being in Iraq. It's a hypervigilant situation. So if I'm around all that, but I get huge highs and low lows. Truck was just talking about it earlier on the podcast, the huge highs and the lows, low and the low lows. So when I experience my life from a developmental age with huge highs and low lows and everything hinges socially, personally, all on this. And then that has to become my purpose because I've lived this long for it anyway. It must be my purpose. Right. I am that glad. Well, we then search out environments to use those tools and purpose. So I can't play ball anymore. Fine. I'm going to go fight. I can't fight anymore. I'm at least coach a motherfucker. And I'm going to go on Tuesday night. Right. We keep trying to push that forward. Well, what's the person at 18, 22, 25? You've been interviewed. You've been in the pros. You made millions with it. You're in the Hall of Fame. Right? You played your senior year and stop. We are finding that it doesn't matter whether it's your senior year and stop or 4 years in the pros. The same severe issues are happening with the idea of that. So what's, you got to look at the person at the end of that roller coaster of development. Who's different and why is it different? They're going to experience depression, sure, because of life, chemical imbalances, whatever they want to call, right? Environment, whatever it may be. Well, so will they from those same environments. But the specimen, the person itself is not the same. Mm-hmm. What this grew up in and what this grew up in, the typical treatment for that is not going to work on this. So the question was how? How did I make that gladiator? How did I make that gladiator to begin with to be such a good athlete and a warrior? How did I do that to begin with? I fucked with their diet, their environment, their friends, their sleep, their activity. I used and focused on everything in their life to get them to be that superior athlete. Well, the only way you can treat that athlete is by focusing on everything in their life because that's what made that machine to begin with. You can't throw them a pill and tell them to talk to a motherfucker once a week.
Yeah.
This dude wants some intensity.
Right.
I need a purpose. I need to. What you really want to do is shut your brain off for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the difference. And we can't continue to look at an athlete and say they have ADHD. Eventually you get diagnosed as being bipolar and they think they have anger issues and major problems. And the fact is they've just been the system that's rigged, is not rigged to treat the athlete, and nor is the depression protocol set up to do so.
Right.
Yeah. That was a little rant there.
Yeah. No, I loved it. I mean, like, basically I feel like you've said, I think you said in the podcast with Catherine or Christina.
Yeah, Christina.
You know, they're just setting up repeat return customers, you know what I mean? So that's, I mean, that was one of the things we talked about online for a second about, you know, I feel like I'm going to be the face of the elderly community, especially in Florida with the new alternative medicine, you know, laws being written up and stuff like that. It's been really tough.
You work in a senior living facility, right?
Yeah, it's technically an assisted living facility.
Sure,
you know, they, and
do they have like the three wings?
Call it a nursing home,
where like you can live without assistance, then assistance, then like a dementia unit.
Yeah, we have four buildings. So like one is our big one. That's where my office is, and it's like, you know, all ranges of people.
What do you do there?
I'm human resources currently and resident care director. Those are the titles. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I mean, I do everything. Just care give. I
worked in one.
Yeah, what did you do?
I was in the dementia side, and I ran activities.
Man, I'm telling you right now, our locked unit, the dementia, like the high level, is my favorite place to work.
No shit.
It's my favorite. You know, finding what it is that, whether it's their triggers and preventing those or how you're going to get that anxiety out of them without, you know, you don't need the medicine. You can give these people some, you know, emotional support or show some intimacy. You know what I mean? Like even a touch, you know, a touch that they don't normally get because their family's not there all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's my favorite part. It's just trying to take the anxiety away from these people's daily life because they know they're losing their mind. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it works. with Alzheimer's. You lose sections of your brain at a time. So you lose short-term memory first, you know what I mean? And like it moves from the front of your brain to the back, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's weird, but what I was hoping that Christina was going to talk about on your podcast, the Journal for Alzheimer's Disease, actually just did a study at the University of South Florida, and they showed in mice, and they're starting human trials soon, you know, the correlation between mice and I think they did studies on a few chimps as well.
Yeah.
But the studies were extremely like promising, where THC, not just CBD, you know, CBD is typically the medicinal aspect of medical marijuana.
Right.
But it was the THC was stopping the enzyme that causes Alzheimer's.
Holy shit.
Not like just stopping it, but they let some of the, in the test, they let them go ahead and get like higher levels of Alzheimer's. Or it was stopping it, and then it was preventing it as well.
Protection at the same
time. So they were bombarding them with this enzyme, this plaque, you know what I mean, that causes Alzheimer's. And the cannabis was just blocking it from actually causing the damage. So they start
human trials really soon. My grandmother's there. She's early dementia right now. It's it's setting.
It's tough.
Yeah, dude.
My grandfather as well.
Oh fuck, man.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. It's really stressful for the family. You know, most people don't understand Alzheimer's and you know the support that they really need. You know what I mean? They're not brain dead people. You know what I mean? They're thinking underneath that. You know, they just can't get it out.
And for me, that would be so scary, is that like I can't quite put the puzzle together, who's who or who I am or where I'm at. Every day you fucking wake up and trying to restart something, or you're trying to remember this. I mean, we used to bring in dogs. The pet therapy was fucking amazing.
We do that.
It was amazing. I was like, bring all of the dogs in the pound here now.
Yeah, seriously.
And just let them hang out, because they were just doggy, doggy, doggy. And they want to hang out with the kids too. So anytime a kid was around, a six-year-old, a two-year-old or something, they just want to hang out together. Mm-hmm. I thought, man, this is a perfect match, man. I was like, man, it's so heart-wrenching though, because I wasn't there too long, but I would watch someone come in to one side, move to one building, move to the next, and then I would lose George. You know what I mean? And then George would be in the dementia unit doing activities with me, and he doesn't remember I knew him 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, and we played checkers or some shit. And you watch that dude. And for me, it was almost so traumatizing. I don't know about you, because you see it every day, you know, way more than I do or have. I used to try to make myself feel better by going, maybe it's okay to forget everything. Maybe it's okay that, you know, that you don't have to remember bad memories or wants or worries or things you didn't do or you're supposed to do. Maybe it's, you know, I tried to spin it that way.
I had that same thought process, man. But the one that stuck with me is, once you really spend a lot of time with them, they're ready, man. They're ready to go. So it's a relief. It's become a relief, you know, when they do finally pass, which is sad as and weird as that might sound, you know what I mean? But you're kind of happy for them.
Yeah.
When they're like, I'm a DNR, which means do not resuscitate. When they're telling you that
over and over.
Yeah. And they're just like, just so you know, make sure, like, if it's tonight, you know,
yeah, and they'll tell you the next night and the next night and the next night.
It's weird, but that's, like I said, it's my favorite part, is getting them back on track on being positive, because Alzheimer's is weird. Like, it can be really bad at times. And then, you know, with the right environment, the right vibes, you know, you can turn someone around and have them functioning, you know, seemingly better. You know what I mean? They'll forget to eat one day, and, you know, you spend some time talking to them, and then they're like eating again. You know what I mean? Or there's
connectivity.
Yeah. Oh, that's all it takes.
They used to make me sad too, when you'd rarely see a family member come, or they'd show up for 2 seconds, you know, and walk out, and you'd just be like, you didn't even see them. They would get lit all day. They're like, hey, they're coming at two. They're coming at two, you know, or something. Or they either don't show up, or they think they're coming at two every day, you know, and they're not. And you would see that. You're right. That connectivity, brother, it used to light them up, man. I remember that.
Yeah, that's a man. That one just gave me chills when you said that, because just a few months ago, I was at the one of our smaller facilities, and this guy, his son came and told him, literally, like, was talking to him about, I was just here. That was his first time I've ever seen him. He hadn't been there in more than 6 months. He was like, oh, you don't remember? I was just here last week. You know what I mean? And that kind of stuff happens. You know, there's family members out there that are, and these people who our POAs, power of attorneys for these residents, they just forget about them. It's really tough, you know, and not everyone. I'm making generalized statements. Like, there are family that are there every day too.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, there were, for sure.
But it's just, that's what takes me back to the alternative medicine and people and them being allowed to make their decisions for themselves and what they should be able to choose as far as medication. Like, I have multiple MS patients or residents who are on so much medicine, like just insane amounts of medicine. And they would love alternative medicine. They beg me for it in conversation. You know what I mean? The families are about it, but they'll lose their funding. You know, the Medicaid doesn't support it, stuff like that, you know? So it's really tough. And then finding a doctor who will work with you.
Yeah, good luck.
Is insane. Yeah. And, but luckily one just opened up. Dr. Brown just opened yesterday in Mount Dora.
Mount Dora.
So that's a location that is decently close, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But, shout out Dr. Brown for working with Alzheimer's patients out there in Mount Dora. Well, that's a good place to set up.
Yeah, definitely. The elderly community is huge out there. There's, mm-hmm. there's facilities everywhere.
Yeah.
But
there's a company, I talked to a guy who represents them sometimes, CanAMD, and they're out there trying to set up doctor's offices. I wonder, because
that's who it is.
Is it CanAMD?
Yeah, CanAMD opened. That's Dr. Thomas Brown.
It is. Small boy shit.
Yeah,
they just helped him open Dr. Brown then. Great, man. Yeah. Hey, shout out to you, Adam Taylor, man, and CanAMD, y'all. Getting a little love. We've actually been talking to them about sponsoring the podcast.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
And coming on. They're actually could be linked with the little store I keep alluding to on the Cognitive Rampage, the store we're going to make. So,
Yeah.
Nice, we're trying to there and a couple other places that I can't talk about yet.
I understand.
That's funny, though. So the same doctor that got her the medicine out there.
Well, we haven't gotten it yet, but I'm just saying he just opened the doors on the 25th, and that's who I'm going to.
And Alzheimer's, I think Christina said, is on the list now too.
Yes.
Here in Florida.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It helps with, you know, appetite, all the basics that people know, you know, CBD relieves pain, like she was talking about.
Yeah.
And then it gives you, you know, hunger, everything. It helps with a lot of stuff, inflammation, whatever, headaches, all types of stuff. But now, like, it's not just a CBD, you know, right now in Florida, it's only low CBD.
Yeah.
I mean, low THC, high CBD.
Right.
You can't really get anything that's psychoactive.
No.
So
it's all medicine here.
I would assume that eventually
I think
the laws are rewritten, they'll follow the science behind it and be able to open the doors up more, you know?
Sounds good. Yeah, right. Yeah, well, once they have the monopoly locked down and the certain people are getting the money for it, then we can bring it to the rest. I mean, we talked about it, Christine, but it's like she walks in, first diagnosed with MS, and the first pill they hand her is this experimental drug they don't have much research on, mm-hmm. which actually would kill her if she had this rare form, which they found out she did have a year later. So for a year, she's taking this pill that was supposed to make her blow up from the inside and die with this rare. But she had access to that at frontline, first visit, first diagnosis. And it took her 4 months. And I talked to her 2 years ago, first on the podcast at episode 30. And here we are 2 years later. And she just got her card. And that took her 4 fucking months.
She just got it?
Just got it.
Man.
The money. $500 to see the doctor. Yeah, $200 to see. It's $1,000.
Yeah, if you can afford it, you can get it. It's just a little time consuming, a little expensive.
But someone with MS on disability.
Yeah, and then you lose your funding, you know what I mean, half the time from the federal government. Once you choose to go that direction, if they find it in your system, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What the fuck, man?
So, I mean, and then the price of the medicine without insurance is just, it's unaffordable. So then the medicine that they do really need with that they, you know, you can supplement some stuff, most stuff with alternative medicine, but not everything, you know, like we were saying, there's some stuff that does help, but then you can't afford that either. You know what I mean? Once you choose to try to like get something with less side effects and you're losing everything.
My God.
You got to either jump in full ship or like,
there's no
like middle ground. It's just, you're in or you're out.
You either got to go right full now. On neuropathy
and have tons of money.
Oh, or go the other way with full on medical treatments and pills that cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in a year.
Either way, it costs you a lot, you know?
It's true.
With the medicine, because your insurance is going to cover the. Yeah, no, this is super, definitely not cheap. If you want to get a good quality stuff, you know? And then, but I mean, once you get off your medication, like, you know, I think you guys talked about it a little bit. The cost of medication without your insurance is just absurd.
Can't touch.
Absurd.
Yeah. And so, now how many people are affected at your facility to where maybe their money, they can't afford the meds they need or something? Or are you Medicaid fed too, as well as private?
Yeah. Most of the money, you know, comes from Medicaid. I can't tell you how often it's a struggle still working with the government, getting the funding that we need. It's like the elderly are on the back burner. You know what I mean? For everything. Every time a new law comes up, every time something new is happening, we're the last to get the attention. It seems like
we fuck kids and old people. That's what we screw them first. Yeah, we go, man. Cut education, screw the kids.
Yep.
And now
middle-aged men running the world are benefiting first.
That's it. You screw the kids that are coming up, yeah, and fuck those motherfucking old people. They're dying, yeah, anyway. So they get fucked. They're like, yeah, the marketing fucking division. You're the first fucking division to get fucking funds cut to, you know, it's fucking a wrap, dude.
Yeah. And they know it's the same thing like you talk about you mentioned it a little bit in your book, and you talk about it some on your podcast. But, you know, with addiction and going into, you know, rehabs and stuff like that, it's the same thing. You know, they're just getting you on more stuff and getting you into a deeper hole. That is, every medicine has a side effect that then they need to give you another medication for. And as I'm going through their charts and trying to, like, you know, what can we do for them? Like, what may be causing this, or why do they feel this way? You know what I mean? It's just, I feel like there's so many compounding medications for 9 out of 10 of my residents that if they were even given the option of alternative medicine, half of the medicines wouldn't even be needed because the side effects wouldn't be there. You get what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Did I articulate that right? I don't know if I'm making sense.
But. No, you are. If we open up this one avenue, then all of a sudden half this shit's not necessary that they're taking. I mean, all they're doing is treating symptoms.
Right, exactly.
They're giving you a pill to treat one symptom, and they did it in the other facilities. Mm-hmm. We give you this pill because it fights bipolar, but we add this pill to it because it fights some certain symptoms. No, that pill was really made for pinky burns, but we're going to mix it with this because we think it does something. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that. That's really what motherfuckers are still doing these days.
Yeah.
The doctors, psychiatrists, they really are going, well, over time, I've found that if you mix this green pill, leaf, whatever, so you can mix anything. They'll come up with something and say, well, I know this medication is generally for IBS or something, but I found if we mixed it with the lithium and then we add this to you, that we actually get a great outcome most of the time with bipolar.
Right.
And I'm like, most of the time. What the fuck? Or, oh, well, yeah, the other times they lose their fucking mind and wind up in prison.
Yeah.
But it's worth a shot, you know? Yeah. That's really what you get, man.
Yeah, I mean, like those, and you never know what you're getting with those hormonal pills too. You know, it's not all about just the, you know, people who have chronic illnesses like MS and, you know, cancer or Alzheimer's, but just regular people who just, you know, old age is getting to them. You know, they need to be in a home, and they are on, you know, you said maybe they have ADD or they have bipolar disorder, or, you know, they are taking medicine for all these hormonal imbalances that they have just from old age that could be balanced out with natural alternatives. And it's just, I don't know, man, it's frustrating looking at it and going through it. And the doctors don't give, not our doctor, not saying that, but, you know, from my experience with doctors, my girlfriend has epilepsy. So we're in doctor's visits constantly. But it just feels like they don't put any thought into it. I don't know if I'm just like not educated enough to, and they can think that fast, you know what I mean? But it's just like they've put everything in a box.
Protocol.
And there's no like looking in the middle. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you have this. This is what they told us to give you for this. You have this. This is what, you know, like you said, symptoms. It's just.
This fucking protocol, man.
Yeah.
And I'm putting this out there. The dentists do it too, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I had a keys trip coming. And I had this terrible mouth pain, and I'm thinking, fuck, what is this? Maybe a cavity or something. Go see one doctor, and he's like, yep, got to do a root canal. And I was like, I'm not going to spend $2,500 right now. I'm going to the Keys for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You're not going to take that. So I went and saw another one. They said, yep, root canal. Then I said, all right, I got a family member who's a dentist here and got a great practice in Winter Park. I'm going to go see him. And I go see him. Same shit. Tells me need a root canal and do the whole thing. 2 days fucking later, I'm at the house, and that little pain. And I try to point it out to every one of them. I said, I got this. You can feel like a sharp thing poking through right there or something. I don't know what that is. Nah, that's nothing. Well, after all these people trying to give me a goddamn root canal, fucking a couple days after seeing my own family member who's done any of the same thing, gave me a whole spiel, hold up a card. It's what we call a something something. Yep. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. So 2 days later, I'm wiggling this little piece, and back where my wisdom teeth, I had them pulled a long time ago.
Yeah.
This one little piece they had broken off and left in there. And it forced itself out anyway. And it popped up. I pulled a little piece out, and I'm rolling a piece of tooth around. And then I Googled it, and I was like, oh, sometimes when they pull teeth, there's leftover roots that whatever that worked their way up, and it was on a nerve. No motherfucker's trying to pull my tooth and or give me a root canal. Three doctors, including family. That's how protocol. They just go, oh, this is signs, symptoms.
Yeah.
And I was going, even my own family member. I was like, I didn't have to spend a fucking dime.
Yeah. Think about the older doctors who aren't keeping up with science, though, too. That's I mean, that's been.
Most of them never even had a nutrition class.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, you're a doctor and you never had a motherfucking nutrition class.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You had a nutrition class in high school.
Right,
the pyramid, you know what I mean?
But yeah, that garbage,
that's all BS. Yeah,
yeah. We had a lady on, Julia Ruckledge, who came on. Great scientist, man. She's doing some cool things, doing all types of research on mental health effects by mineral replacement, and checking baselines of minerals and been adjust them. And she made some pretty breakthrough stuff on ADHD. I know they were doing something else with postpartum depression or something like that right now. A few different studies, but she came on. So, I mean, that's why I get excited when I listen. I hear minerals, I hear food, I hear all these different. That's why I had to put that book, that integrated thing of going, look, there's so many options, ideas, and thoughts in there, you know, of possibilities, of wonder. The fact that we are call ourselves a developed country and the leaders of technology, and cannabis is still not available to even motherfuckers that are dying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I'm on my last leg, you know, if I make it to 120, you know what I mean? So you should have free reign. Steal.
Think about this for a second. Think about this. Okay. Hospice care comes in. You know, were you familiar with hospice when you worked there? Okay.
You know, so they come in, sit bedside. In. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what they do? Hospice. I love you guys. I mean, they're great. They help people die comfortably.
I actually heard a whole scam that they were running this whole place, and they were killing people off on purpose because they couldn't pay for the beds.
Listen, this is what they do. This is kind of how they work. Okay, it's kind of how they work. They come in at one, you know, people escalate to a certain point where they can't feed themselves anymore. Right. They can't hardly swallow. So, you know, sometimes they get put on a feeding tube.
Take me out then. That's me. I'm in.
That's how I feel.
Thank you, hospice.
And that's, you know, that's what a lot of people feel. And that goes to the debate of like that assisted suicide debate you could go into, but that's a whole other story. But the hospice comes in and they cut nutrition. They completely stop feeding them. They get no more food or nutrition.
They fucking starve you.
And then they bombard them with pain medication. So they have no appetite.
Just numb them out.
And then they just numb them out until they starve to death.
And fuck that's you. It. Fuck you. They're starving them to death
Exactly, dude. I mean, they come in and they'll give them like some time and feel them out. You know, sometimes they'll bounce back. But dude.
Once hospice shows up, you're done.
Yeah, you know. And they know. When hospice comes in, they're like, they start freaking out, man. Unless they're like ready or completely incontinent and to a point where they don't even know who the nurse is. You know what I mean?
Fucking hell.
Yeah. That when I realized that, it really started making me like question what is going on in this industry. And then I started, you know, looking into it more, and I feel like somebody's got to stand up for them. You know what I mean? There's nobody really out there. I feel like standing up for the elderly community. You know what I mean?
I'm just going to point out, perhaps, sir, you do have a purpose and you've already found it and you're doing it. What the fuck are you looking for?
So. I don't know.
Your whole mannerisms changed, bro, when we started talking about this.
Yeah.
The way you, we'll go back and watch this shit later.
Okay.
When we get into senior living, Alzheimer's, when we get into this, watch how you say, you pop up, you start moving the hands. You're like, no, seriously, you're here. You're here. You're rampaging with me. You're cognitive. You're here. We're talking about fighting and training. I'll fight one day again. I will.
Yeah.
And I will. It's true. No, they fucking do this. They hospice comes. This, you see, that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And that honestly, I think about that all the time, and it makes me question what I'm doing with my life. I question that every single day.
You're doing a beautiful thing already, man. Just the fact you're standing here speaking up for probably 10 people that have no family that give a fuck, that even knows that they're sitting there, you know, and do that. Dude, That hospice shit's trippy, man. I don't want to put the name out there, but there was a director of a place that no longer is a director of that place that left there and walked me through it and was like, this is what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And certain hospitals, when they were out of money, when insurance was done, when they were tapped out and they needed new beds for paying customers, hospice got the phone call to come them eliminate those people that were taking up bed space for new paying customers coming in. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm like, I tried to call a reporter I know. I was like, hey, I got a story for you. Wouldn't touch it.
They try to take our residents. You know what I'm saying? I mean, not really. Like, they don't try to take our residents, but they would prefer, they get paid more when the resident comes to their hospice, you know, like rehab facility and stuff like that. And they
rehab
get to bring
facility.
Them into their
real
place.
Fucking nice.
I think that's the term. I may be,
that would be
using
funny
the correct term, but
their
hospice
funny
facilities, you know what I mean? They charge those residents for that stay there. All the medication and stuff that
drain
all
them one
up
last
yep
time.
Yep.
Tap the little last bit
yeah
of
I'm
bank
probably
account
in trouble for saying this, but that's the truth. You know what I mean? That's how I feel. That's my perspective from what I've seen. I don't, you know,
well,
I'm not saying
so let's
definitely
do this. Let's try and let's make the dualistic argument. Okay. Let's be the other side.
Yeah.
Let's be the other side. No one is here. No one's taking care of them. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a visitor in 3 years. Their Medicaid is cut down to almost nothing. We've been paying for the bed ourselves almost out of pocket for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And no family member. We've reached out to everybody and have forever. They've just been abandoned. And frankly, they're not really happy to be here anyway.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's 50% of the time, or maybe they don't know, or they're completely incompetent and they're not even here. So aren't we doing them a favor?
And yeah, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. That they do, they're ready to go. So it's a bittersweet thing. You know
sure
what I mean?
Sure.
Like I had that thought process when I first realized what was going on. And then I had that anger hit me. I definitely, you know, thought about it and you put it you articulated that perfectly. There is a pro to it, you know, for sure. And it definitely goes case by case, but it's still trippy. Like still that idea of what it is that's happening. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like throwing the puppy out back, right?
Yeah,
driving
like
it out to the field.
Just
let it go.
Capping the sick dog, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I guess
that would be nicer.
Yeah.
If you just put it out of the misery, but I got to starve to fucking death.
Well, I think that's kind of what they do. They take them out of their misery.
They
you know
think
what I mean? I guess as far as we know, they're unconscious. So we can't know how they're feeling.
I don't know. I've seen that Metallica 1 video.
Yeah, oh my goodness. He was like awake while he was... Oh yeah,
missing limbs. No, can't talk, can't speak, can't feel. So I mean, just because they're still, it sounds to me like we drug them so we don't have to take care of them anymore.
Yeah.
So let's just say they can't move. Let's just drug them so they can't move.
It gets to a point where they are almost forced into it because they decline so much that it takes too many people to help them, and then it becomes like, are we going to just keep forcing them through the motions, or mm-hmm. let them stay in bed and?
Take me out. I'm in.
I agree. And I would probably be happy hospice came. You know what I mean? I'd be like, I'd tell them to call hospice.
I would go to hospice. I'm going home. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I guess you're right. Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
fucking
yeah
out, dog. I may go be a hobo for a little bit. You know what I mean? I'm going out. I'm not going to die in a fucking fluorescent lighting, you know, teal painted baby blue, some fucking gross hospital smelling. No.
You're going to be an elopement risk in our facility.
That's cool. I may go fishing with just enough gas to get out.
There you go.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like
and just go. Eventually, I don't know, man. Fuck.
I feel you.
That's my heart's for that, man. And I'm watching my grandmother, you know, start to get there. Mm-hmm. And it's so fucking scary and sad. You know, I try to talk to her as much as I can now. And, you know, she's still there.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. not.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to be like, just, you sure? Or it's got to be a good thing. You know, it's got to be.
Yep.
It's fucking, that's how to tell myself, man. And, It's just hard. And you see it every day, man. And just those, I think it was maybe 4 months I was there. I don't know. 4 or 5 out of 6. Oh, shit, I don't know.
Dude, that's a long time. I mean,
I couldn't take it. I had to get out. I left.
I can't tell you how many caregivers are in and out in less than a month because they get in, they don't realize what they're getting into. You know what I mean? It could just be a 911 call. Like somebody fell and they're done. Like they're like, I can't, they didn't know. They would have to be dealing with blood, you know what I mean? Or they didn't know that someone was going to have a bowel movement that was bigger than they've ever seen before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like people don't know what they're getting into sometimes. Yeah. It doesn't matter. There's all kinds of stuff that happens. So, five, 6 months, even 4 months, like 90 days, dude, I'm happy with that when I'm hiring people.
No shit. No shit. So if you get 5-6 months, man, trying to come up with activities, trying to do things that would engage them, and nothing, I from my perspective, nothing worked like music and pets.
Dude.
And kids.
You got it. You're hitting it. I mean, well, they teach us, you know, daily structure, you know, helps with Alzheimer's and helps them be able to maintain that structure longer. Their brain can remember it, you know what I mean? But that's one of the biggest things. Research shows that activities is the number one thing, you know, that they have something to stimulate their brain and make them move around and think, get their blood flowing, get their brain firing a little bit more. So we are super heavy on activities. You know, most facilities will do it like, I think, I don't even know what the state regulation is. It's like 2 hours a week or something. It's something Dude, ridiculous. It
was the bullshit they had us doing. I was just coming up with shit. I was doing more stuff. I'm like, what do you mean I got to do that for 30 minutes? And that's not a fucking activity.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a full-time activities director who, you know, 9 to 5, we don't have a time where they're not active, which I think, you know, it's definitely a much better environment when you walk into our facility than other ones. I get it. Every single interview I have, people come in from doing interviews at different facilities and they walk in and they're just like, this is different. This is awesome. You know, like it's, but that's because what I was telling you, the outlook I have on Alzheimer's and being intimate, and it's important to have that emotional connection.
Yeah.
I make sure, you know, I try my best to make that with the person when I'm interviewing them so that I know that they're the type of person, you know what I mean? That they could be with the team. Yeah. I've been lucky recently, built, you know, got a really good foundation of people right now, staff wise, that I can tell are super passionate about it. You know what I mean? If you're doing something for the money, I'm sitting here having like epiphanies and revelations of what you said earlier as I'm talking. And I'm just like, you know, I got into fighting because I just looked at it like, man, I could fuck up everyone's favorite fighter. Fuck that. Like I'm watching it thinking, you know, I just have that fighter mentality. Like I feel like any fight I'm going to win, you know what I mean? So
sounds like something some of these elderly people could use on their team.
Yeah. So, but then at the same time, you know, I have that contradictory thought of like how passionate I am about, you know, elderly and stuff like that. So it's.
Dude, it's I'm over here going, there's a chance. I'm over here like, okay, there's a chance in the world. This young man is dedicated to doing a job I tried for 6 months, bro. And I had to go, I'm going to lose my own mind. I'm too attached. I'm too connected. Like it was bad and I couldn't do anything, you know, and I had to go. But
it happens. And it happened to me. I fought through it, you know.
Imagine that.
It's just, you know, it's
imagine
taking
that.
Some time to think about it, you know what I mean? And kind of make sure you got the right perspective, doing a little research and. I don't know.
I fucking do.
Yeah.
And I see you, man. You've been rampaging about this.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot to know that, you know, you can definitely feel that energy because it's something that I've become passionate about recently. I didn't know, you know, that I even was passionate about it till I really came back to it. I've been in nursing homes as a kid and stuff like that. My mom was an RN for my entire life. So
I was going to ask
hospitals
you.
Hospitals and stuff.
What happened? What made you go, I'm going to go there for a job?
So, all right, funny story, not really that funny. It's small town, you know, my mother was an RN for like 25 years, grew up, I'm from Ocoee. We started out straight, nothing. My mom was in nursing school. They had me at 17 and 18. So I grew up with my parents going through their 20s, you know, riding around with them and listening to rap music and watching them grind and come up. And my mom was going to school. My dad was working like 3 jobs, you know. But I never felt like I didn't have parents around them. I'm not trying to say that. Like I didn't have a hard, you know, struggle or anything like that. But I was in the facilities a lot because my mom, opened the garden. She owns the facilities.
No kidding.
So when she opened the first one, it was where we lived. We were living in the house. And my dad remodeled it, him and I. Almost completely ourselves, other than like some electrical, you know what I mean? And like serious plumbing and state regulated stuff. But, so
the garden is the name of it.
The garden.
Where's it at?
There's two in Orange County, two in Lake County.
Yeah, shout it out.
Yeah, the Gardens Assisted Living Facility. We got, you know, the gardens at Lakeview, the gardens at Oakland, the gardens at Mount Vernon, the gardens at Tavares. It's just the gardens at, you know, and then whatever county or city it is or what, you know, landmark. The gardens at Lakeview is on a street that I think it's 30 West Garden Avenue, but it's overviewing Lake Apopka. So it's Garden at Lakeview, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, I forgot where I was going.
No, you're talking to, we were just talking about how you were opening the facilities. We were putting the facilities out for the garden.
So we lived in the first one. My mom was working nonstop. And so I was there a lot. I would go just to be able to see my mom. I would go and like stay the night, hang out with the elderly. And I used to think nothing of it. You know what I mean? I never was passionate about it or anything. Like every kid, where I'm going to be in the NFL. I don't care about anything else. Mm-hmm. I'm playing football. I slept with my football. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I was that kid until I found wrestling. But, so I left that whole scene for a while because I was like, I'm not following in my parents' footsteps, you know, screw that. Like, it's cool.
I'm going to make my own way.
Yeah. I did. I went to school. I only went to school for 2 years, man. I like left that.
Good for you.
That's where I was like, I was in a dark place. I think when you brought up the idea of athlete's depression, and I just got a short briefing on it until now, until this podcast, I was like, wait, did I have that? You know what I mean? Because it was like partially me experiencing like the darkness of the world, you know, through the internet and actually like reading for the first time in my life. You know,
imagine that, right? Yeah. Imagine that.
and then also, you know, the wrestling lifestyle is just depressing. Like you say, being up at 5 o'clock in the morning, doing up downs in the cold snow, you know, stuff like that. It's just depressing. So.
That's funny. It's depressing. 5 a.m. I'm slamming my face in the snow.
Yeah. So that's when it was making me think about that. But
And either way, it's still a symptom. You know, athlete's depression, that diagnosis, if you will, is still to me a symptom. And it's how we approach. I think it's still important. I'm not a big fan of diagnosis and labels, but we have to have a starting approach where how do we treat this thing? So we got to call it a thing to try to figure out how to treat that thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's still a symptom. Athlete's depression is still a symptom, and it's about treating the person, not the symptom itself. So for me, I call it a diagnosis because that's the only way I think they'll do more research, put bigger money into it to find new ways to treat it.
That's perfect. That makes great sense, man. So yeah, but basically I went off to college, came back. I was like, man, screw school. I realized this, you know, I wasn't even taking my AA classes. Like I was I literally took maybe two like main credit hours. You know what I mean? Courses. I have 24 credit hours and they're all religion and history.
Oh,
I was literally going from ancient history class then to the Old Testament and like telling my teacher, like, well, that doesn't make any sense from what he just told me. You know, that was pissing the teachers off and stuff.
You went there.
Oh, yeah.
You got all into the wild guy.
Yeah, my classmates hated me in religion class. Because, you know, most people take religion because they're into it and into that religion. And I was in there not because I was into it, but I wanted to learn about it.
Sure.
It freaking influences people more than anything in the history of humankind as far as I'm concerned. But
and it does have an actual positive effect or influence on mental health outcomes. It does. Yeah, people that are religious tend to be healthier or also tend to be happier at the same time.
And I mean, that's the whole principle behind the whole AA program and NA, you know what I mean? I mean, I went through that when I was, you know, in my early 20s. I got a DUI and had to go through the whole program and all that. And they will convince you. I mean, in my mind, still to this day, I'm like convinced, you know, I'm an addict, you know, like that's how I feel.
Those words are not to be muttered within this studio. Within this studio, I am an addict will not be muttered within this studio, sir.
All right, got you.
I respect your belief and you can have it out there. No, you are not an addict. You are affected by addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, you try to keep that mindset.
You're unaffected by the symptom of addiction. We are affected by that symptom. We don't say I'm headache, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, I'm such a headache today.
Yeah, you're true.
Yeah, we're not.
I mean, you're right.
Or we are not our symptoms, bro. You know.
Yeah.
But dude, like, you go through addiction, or not addiction, a little drinking issue with some DUI. You overcome that. I mean, you've been a warrior yourself. You're dealing with this new idea, even to medical science about what Addison's is. Mm-hmm. And through that, you're also trying, not trying, but have a fight career that you're doing. But you're also where I see a passion that lies in a purpose, man, where so many people are forgotten, where so many warriors like yourself really are still needed. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me, there's more warriors needed in there than there are in the goddamn cage.
It's not the warriors that are forgotten, man. It's the people that that's these what I mean. Warriors are fighting for. Even
but there's none of how many of you are signing up to go work where you are and go, this is what I want to do.
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Right.
So the warriors like yourself that are going in there to help those people to work in that environment, to give a fuck. Mm-hmm. You're not collecting a check. You're thinking about, you're researching shit. You know, you're finding ways to do that. Those warriors, I'm telling you, are in more need now than another one in the ring.
I got you. I hear you. And I get that from my family and my girlfriend and my friends constantly. Not all my friends, like half of my friends are fighters. Part of the reason that, that I'm in there. They're natural.
Fuck that breakup. That's hard. Man.
So I feel like I can't give it up. Like I'm fiending for it since I've been out of it for a while, you know?
Sure. Get that fixed, man. So, keep going that way.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know what? You don't have to choose.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I was listening to Stipe Miocic. Man, that guy.
Love that dude.
Yeah, he's a.
We needed him. We needed another one of those heavyweights that was just like your all-American Apollo Creed type guy. You know what I mean? Who's just, all-American all the time. They did that. It's been missing a while.
Yeah, a good role model. Someone that can motivate you. You can look up to. Not that is just putting their middle finger up to everybody, which. I enjoy that aspect of it too. You know what
I
mean?
It's getting, like, on my fucking nerves, dude.
It's getting too far.
It's getting WWE.
Yeah.
This is retarded, man. Like I'm getting like, okay, towards, and some of these guys are so bad at shit talking that it's laughable.
Ruining it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the guy who thinks he can rap and he starts doing it and you're going, no. Yeah. No. Don't do that, man.
Oh man, that's what. Yeah.
And I miss. That's why I love Thug Rose. I love when Thug Rose came up and said what you said. I'm not saying everybody's got to come around, and I get what Joe's answer to that too is, like, hey, you're fucking getting in there and fighting this motherfucker. He's trying to hurt you. He's trying to destroy you. So a mind frame of fuck you and fuck you is cool. I get the idea,
right?
But that sportsmanship she talked to that it's just not necessary. It's not, but. Fucking makes the dough.
Yeah,
exactly. It makes me fucking watch. I somebody talk shit on Twitter or something. I'm like, God, it got me, motherfucker. Yep, I'm watching a fight that I've been hyped up that ain't gonna be shit, and here I am watching it like, oh, it could be close. Mm-hmm. This ain't gonna be close.
Yeah,
you know, but like that last fight, man, that Ngannou Stipe fight was off the chain. I liked it.
It was incredible.
Yeah, it was just like to watch it at any moment. You thought, don't get hit with that. You're like, even at half ass. That fucking 2,000-pound swinging, I think that's what he measured on that hit machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he doubled what the record was. Doubled. Goodness.
He's another species, man. He's like a giant.
He doubled the hardest hit on that machine of all time. Doubled it, bro.
Yeah, that's insane. I multiple times when he landed punches, even in the later rounds, it was like, oh, he's dead. Stipe's got him. And then they'd stand up and he'd come with his flurry. And I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah, and and everyone, Stipe get hit, and you see him like he had to go into like Stipe, I'm still here mode, where he's just like robot. He had to just go to it. But me, fuck, I'd have been through that ring and floor 2,000 pounds, bro. 2,000 pounds of pressure on a
one punch. That I mean,
yeah, Stipe's the shit. You know, fuck talking about him. He got an early chance. We'll probably see him again, but Stipe's the fucking man.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's claiming to be the best. You know, heavyweight of all time, I think, between him and Fedor. Yeah. It's close.
The Fedor stuff, that's hard. You know what I mean? We like
30 and 0, you know, for a long time. Didn't he just lose?
Before testing?
Who did he just lose to?
In pre-testing?
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that.
Well, we should do what? They should call it like PS or like pre-steroids or pre-golden snitch. You know, they should do that. You know, the records and the fighting pre-golden snitch and then post-golden snitch. And from there, we'll count records. That way, Bonds McGuire can still be in the Baseball Hall of Fame just with asterisks.
Yeah.
You know, pre-steroids, post-steroids.
Yeah, that's a good thought. What do you think about steroids, though? Do you think, like, Joe Rogan talked about it one time where he thinks that there'll be two leagues for all the stuff, like a steroid league and then the regular league.
Why not? Yeah, I think so. I think you're going to, the fighters that one don't want to let go are going to wind up somewhere, which seems to be Bellator right now, you know, where, or they're actually paying more or they're going over to get more money. But I think eventually maybe it does get to it. I think we may even see the bare knuckle. one. I think we may bring, I think it's safer.
I do too. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think you do. You dump the gloves, you know, less hitting, less impact, more calculating possibly from when you choose that shot.
Exactly.
You know, maybe even more exciting, you know, from that, because that shot and less damage to the heads trying to save hands. But I,
you'll lose the brawling aspect of it significantly, probably. You know what I mean? Because every punch, where it lands on the face matters. You know what I mean? Like, as far as on your knuckles and fists, it's going to mess you up. You can't punch to the back of the head. Right. You can get away with that, you know, and the ref doesn't always call it.
That's what happens in the back of the head when you hit someone in the back of the head, though.
Oh, there you go. You know.
Gone. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. But it's right, because now this new phase of fighter, the Nurmagomedov, the pull you down, hold you down, pound your face, and I don't care how good at jiu-jitsu you are. Yeah. You know, that guy who's – did you see that video I posted on Fight Life? Where he was wrestling a fucking bear.
Habib?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I saw
did
that.
Did you see that shit?
Yeah, that was insane. Is it little, like, he was like 10 years old or something like that? Yeah.
9.
Oh, he's 9?
Yeah, dude, the bear had a double leg, too. You said the bear knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he was moves. Yeah, he hit a single at one point. He was, like, hitting that, dropping the shoulder down. I was, like, impressed, man.
I was like, the bear got game.
Yeah,
but that's why they're winning the 9. Olympics. And, yeah, and doing that. And so what is that? What would the bear hand do to that style? To where I hold you down and I'm...
Yeah.
I'm going to hit you a bunch, just pound you down. What? I can't do that.
Yeah, no.
Without that glove. Well, I can. I mean, I may be open-handing you in a minute. You know, I'm going to start doing this on you.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be majorly incorporated is the open hand hit, because that still holds a lot of power. What was it?
Boss.
Yeah, Boss Rutten does that a lot. And what was that fight league? That,
dude, I watched.
A blank on it. The fight league that he was in?
Oh, not Pancrase.
It was Pancrase that I was thinking about. They did open hand.
Yeah.
Fights in that, right?
They're starting new jiu-jitsu. 10th Planet is doing that now.
I saw it.
Striking jiu-jitsu or whatever, combat jiu-jitsu, where you can open hand now.
Mm-hmm. Leleo Code, Leo West, who trains at Fusion.
Yeah.
He's doing that too with his events as well.
Smart.
Yeah, I think the last one and the one before that were, he had everything. Jiu-jitsu, you know, like the combat jiu-jitsu.
Beast.
Like light MMA.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be...
Shout out Leo. Yeah, he'll be on the show. Sure. I mean, this is the Fight Life podcast. We're going to be broadcasting live from Fusion a couple nights, too.
Oh,
talking to those guys. Yeah, that's
awesome, man.
That's where we're headed with the Fight Life. Well, maybe we do your show when you come back after you get this fight in April, yeah?
Yeah, that would be awesome, man, for sure.
It's fun, man. That's what I love to do. You live in a town. You're born in one that I was pretty much raised in, too. So,
yeah.
Same idea, man. This is beautiful.
It's pretty awesome.
Give me a shout out, man. For I appreciate you coming on and share, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me, dude. I was nervous. I heard this statement one time, you know, if you can't explain something good enough that a fifth grader would understand it, you shouldn't be talking about it. And I'm like 90% of what I like research, I can't explain anything in my life to a fifth grader. So how am I supposed to come onto a podcast and like articulate these things to a normal person? You know what I mean?
Like Truck Gordon said, it's the action that matters most, man. And so whether you're articulating anything, I could give a shit if you are, because the actions that you do every day mean a whole lot fucking more than I'm just articulating it, bro. And you have certainly articulated your passion for something and for people that are long and long forgotten, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's good to hear that it actually came across well. I was nervous about that, for sure.
There's no denying you give a fuck.
That's awesome.
I'm just saying, there's no denying you give a fuck.
That's awesome.
For sure, man. I appreciate it, man. Anytime, dude. And I always try to give an opportunity, man. Anything you wanted to mention, because I had serious podcast remorse when I got off Rogan, and I have to live with that. And there's a couple statements I've made on that podcast that still to this day make me fucking cringe that I said that shiz and things I didn't get to say. So I try to say, was there something you wanted to say? So podcast remorse is fucking real.
Yeah, I think I heard you say that on one of them. I was watching a couple of your podcasts this week, you know.
Trying
to get the feel of it, lose some nerves, you know. But no, I don't really have anything. I really just wanted to, I was hoping to touch on, you know, the fact that the elderly are in a similar situation to addicts, you know what I mean? They're put on the back burner. And just think about, you know, we're all going to be in that position one day. And, you know, think about looking in the mirror and not recognizing yourself. You know what I mean? Yeah. Imagine your mom or your grandma going through that. So, I mean, that's just the perspective I have when I'm working every day. And it's what like drives me and it motivates me in other aspects of my life as well to be healthier, to, you know, pursue my passions and my other passions. You know what I mean? I don't feel like you have to stick with one passion or one purpose. You know what I mean? So that thought has kind of motivated me a lot, and I came up with that on my own. So that's like the only thing I could think of to say, you know what I mean?
That's a hell of a cognitive rampage at the end, bro.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Of course. Anytime, man. Just let me know.